So, good morning everyone. Today, Professor Seidel has a bad cold, so I will perform the lecture. And as far as I know, last time you already started with a translation of a pure functional language. So, let's do a small recap what you have done so far. You have seen the program and the expressions of which the program exists. You have done a small example. You have already seen the difference between call by value and call by need. By call by value, you always compute the value, whereas for call by need, you don't evaluate an expression immediately, but you save this for a later time. The architecture of this functional language, for that, we also have a code store similar to the CIMA, and we also have a runtime stack. This is also similar to the CIMA, nothing special here. However, we have here a heap which is in a different place than the stack. So this is a little bit different to the CIMA. Then you have already seen the basic abstract data types. So what do we have here? Well, one time we had this basic value thing where we only stored integer values in. Then the second most interesting thing in our language is this functional abstract data type, where we had in the first component the tag, well, as in the basic value, and in the second component we have this code pointer, and then what's following is this this cell here. So the third cell is for the arguments. So we have a pointer to a list of arguments. And last but not least, we have this pointer to our global variables. Well, what else do we have? We have a closure. So this is particularly interesting for this call by need thing. So we just wrap an expression, we don't evaluate it right on, and we save it for later. For this closure thing, again, we have a code store. So here we have a pointer to our actual code we want to execute, and we somehow need to save all the global surrounding variables. Therefore, we again have a pointer to the global variables which are stored in a vector. So on the last basic abstract data type is then here a vector. So in the first component, again, we have this tag which says which data type or which abstract data type it is. And in the second component, we have the value how long this vector actually is. And then in the ongoing components, we have the actual entries of the vector. So in functional languages, this is somehow similar to n-ary tuples. Okay, so these are our basic abstract data types. Later on, we will extend these data types. But so far, this is enough. Yes? Yeah, we will see that later on. But of course, local variables are perfectly fine too. But the local variables are managed on the stack, similar to our CIMA.
Okay, because the function goes only a global pointer to the global variable.
Exactly. Again, these things here where we point to, these are things which are allocated on the heap and not on the stack. And the local variables, these ones will be allocated on the stack. Again, we will build up a stack frame where all the local variables are stored in, similar to this CIMA function. Yeah.
Essentially, the argument pointer is pointing to a vector that must form the argument. Is that correct?
Yes, the argument pointer, again, this one will point to a vector, so it will point to something like this, where all the arguments are saved in. And similar for this, global thing here, for this global variables, it will also point to a vector. And again, also this closure thing, this will also will point to a vector in the heap. No. This is not pointing to this argument thing. So these are three different structures. This is a different structure. Then this is a different structure. This is just a pointer to an arbitrary heap object, and this one also. Okay. So.
Can be a vector or a basic value.
Sorry. Say again. No, it is, well, whenever we point into the heap, then we point to one of these abstract data types, which is either this this tuple containing just this tag B for basic value, and in the second component here, there the actual basic value is stored, and we only have integers as basic values. Or, well, we can also point to a vector here, for example, or we can point to a function like here. This can be in the heap, or a closure can be in the heap.
And a closure is something like an expression in a function.
Sorry, say again.
And a closure is an unevaluated expression in a function.
A closure is wrapping an expression, and then it can be an arbitrary expression. It doesn't need to be a function. It can be any expression.
But a function can be an expression too. So
of course.
What's the difference between a function and a closure? Why do I need the function?
Well, the idea of enclosure is that you have an arbitrary expression which you do not evaluate right on, but you evaluate it only when the actual value is needed. Okay? But this is something, I mean, Didn't you already have the slides last time? So this, I just wanted to do a small recap. If you have too much questions, we should probably skip this to the tutorial, because otherwise we cannot go on. So this is the normal lecture right now. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. In Haskell, you only have this call by need, if I'm right. And in OCaml, you typically only have this call by value. But I think even in OCaml, you can have these closures, or you can, yeah. Okay. Further questions? Okay. Then go on. You have already seen that we have this code V, which is the normal case in our language, where we generate code for an expression E, and as a return value, we have a pointer on the stack which points to an object into the heap. Whereas for code B, the actual basic value, so the result of the expression E, is computed and pushed on top of the stack. Whereas for this code C, well, as we said before, this generates these closure things and then puts a reference on that on top of the stack. Okay, and as far as I know, last time you have ended somehow here. So you already started with these simple expressions, And you have seen that this is somehow similar to the schema, where you have this code generation for a basic value. You just do a load and push this constant on top of the stack. So this is really similar to our schema code generation. Then you have seen this code generation for a unary expression. Well, in order to do this, you first need to emit code in order to generate code for this expression E. And afterwards, when this has been done, the value of this expression is on top of the stack, so we can finally execute the operand. Similar is the binary expression. You emit code for the first expression, then emit code for the second expression, and you perform the operator. If I'm right, what you haven't seen so far is what this SD, this argument is. And well, you will later on see what this is really, what's about that. It's a small abbreviation about stack distance and how we can access our local variables. So this somehow plays together with a stack pointer, but we will see later on how this is defined and how we make use of it. But the only thing you should note right now is that when we execute, once we have evaluated E1, the stack grows by one, namely the result of E1 is pushed on top of the stack, therefore we have a plus one here. But once again, you will see later on what the semantics of this stack distance really is all about. Okay, and this was the last slide you have seen last time. So, yeah, let's have a look at it again. Well, this code generation scheme for an if-then-else is really similar to the code generation of an if-then-else for the schema. We first evaluate the actual condition, which we have given here by this E0. Depending on that, we do a conditional jump. Either if it's true or false, we jump to the then or to the else part. And in case it is true, we emit code for the true part and then jump to the very end of the expression. Otherwise, we have a tag here where we emit code for the false branch. And then we fall through. Once this is executed, we just fall through to this label B, where we then can continue with the upcoming expressions. Okay, so far this was everything which you have done last time. So now I guess the new stuff begins. So, yeah, what should somehow remind you from the schema is this address environment row. This is really similar to the schema thing, so there is nothing special about it. However, what is somehow special is this thing SD. This is a new argument which you don't know so far. So this SD stands for stack difference, and it simulates the movement of the stack pointer. Well, we have already seen in the schema that the stack pointer can, or the stack itself, it can grow or shrink. And by this stack difference, we somehow simulate the movement of the stack, so when it grows or when it shrinks. Again, you will see later on why we need this. This is somehow important for us, because what I can spoiler right now is that for functions, we cannot make use of a frame pointer. But once again, we will see this in a second. Then for this code generations, well, we have seen this operator 1 and operator 2 for unary and binary operators, and they are defined as in the schema. So there is nothing special. It's really similar to the schema. For all these other expressions, we have a generic code generation scheme given here, where we say that the basic value of such an expression is just the evaluation of the expression E, where the result is actually stored in the heap, and we have just a reference to this value. And well, since we want to emit code B, so we expect that the result of this expression is on top of the stack, we have this primitive, which is called getBasic. This will just look up at the very first stack cell and dereference the value it points to and get the basic value and puts this on top of the stack. So this is what I've told you here. The getBasic instruction, what it does is it first checks if the topmost stack cell, if it points to a heap cell which has a basic value. So this is done here. We just look at the very first stack cell, dereference it, check is it really a basic value, so is this an expression which was somehow evaluated. If it's not the case, we will throw an error, and otherwise we will just take out the value of this and put it on top of the stack. So we will take this and put it on top of the stack. So afterwards, the stack pointer did not increase or did not lower. Yes, that's a question. Sorry, say again. Ah, okay. Yes. No, you don't. This is just an primitive operation, this get basic. So this is just the semantics of the operator get basic. This is nothing which you would implement or generate code for, but this is how the operator get basic is defined in this functional language. Sorry, can you speak up a little bit? So your question is about if you generate code for this one here?
If we need to know it for the examination, how this
definition... Ah, for the examination. Ah, so you're thinking already about the exam. Okay. For the exam, I haven't thought about it right now, but you somehow need to know the semantics of the operators, right? So far, the only thing I can tell you about the exam is that everything which we talk about in the lecture is a possibility that it will come as an exercise in the exam, okay? But I mean, well, getBasic is hopefully not too complicated. Again, it just looks at the top of the stack. If it has a reference to a basic value on the heap, then it somehow dereferences, if you want so, and puts the value of that thing on top of the stack. Okay? Further questions? So let's go on. We have seen this code generation schemes for these where we always expected the basic value on top of the stack. So now we have these code generation schemes, this code V, where we expect that a reference is then on top of the stack to this particular value, which points then into the heap. So the code generation scheme for code V for a constant is then given as, well, we first push the constant on top of the stack, and then we have a primitive called makeBasic. Well, makeBasic does the following. It takes the basic value on top of the stack, generates a new object in the heap, namely this thing, this tuple B for basic thing, and then whatever was on the stack. So if the value 42 was on top of the stack, makeBasic generates this abstract data structure and puts the pointer on top of the stack to this abstract data structure. But you will see later on a definition for this one too. So this means finally what is left then on top of the stack is not this constant B anymore, but a pointer into the heap of this abstract data structure. This B is just a constant. It's an arbitrary constant. Okay. So B...
What you want to load is a vector, right?
No. This code V stands for value. Once again, we have this three things here. We have code V, which generates code for this expression such that the value of it is stored in the heap. Then code B does the similar thing, but it evaluates this expression such that the value is on top of the stack. And then we have this code C, which generates a closure. So we don't immediately evaluate this expression. So let's come back. This B is an arbitrary constant. It's an arbitrary integer constant, so it's in Z. Let's continue with this unary code generation scheme. Well, for that, we emit code B of the expression. So that means as soon as the expression is evaluated, the basic value is on top of the stack, then we execute this operator, then we have the result on top of the stack, and then similar to this code generation scheme before for basic integer, we perform this make basic. So now comes the question, why do we actually emit here code B when we actually want code V? Do you have any idea? Why we actually, yes.
So we can hide.
Exactly. But why particularly couldn't we use here also code V of this expression?
The way that the operator works is that it takes whatever is on top of the stack.
Okay, yes. Strictly speaking, we also could make use there of code V, but then we would immediately dereference the pointer and take out the value which this thing points to. So this is already a small optimization. Is this clear? Does everyone understand?
We can do code B and then get basic and operate the basic.
Yes, exactly. So this is a small optimization here already. We could take use here code V, but then after this thing is executed, we would need to perform this get basic in order to, well, dereference the pointer on top of the stack and get out the basic value. But well, this is something we can spare us right now. Okay, so let's move on. Then we have this binary operator. Again, this is somehow similar to the SEMA code thing. So this means we first do this code B of this expression E1. We evaluate it. Then we evaluate or we emit code in order to evaluate E2. And then, again, we have this code B thing here. So we have the result values of the expressions E1 and E2 are now on top of the stack. So we can immediately apply this operator 2, which will pop these both values of the expressions, perform the operation, put the result on top of the stack, and then afterwards we can perform this make basic instruction, which takes the topmost stack cell, wraps it into this abstract data type, and then put a reference on top of the stack, which points to this heap cell. Then we have this code generation scheme for an if-then-else. Again, this is somehow similar to this code B thing. We first evaluate the condition. Depending on that, we do a conditional jump to a label A. We perform code generation for E1 and E2, so for the true and false case. We have this unconditional jump here to the very end in case we are in this true case. However, what we also observe here right now is that for the condition, we perform a code B generation. Why that? Any idea? Why don't we make use of code V here? Because we actually want to emit code V here, right? So why do we make use of... Yeah, exactly. This is the same argument as for the unary and binary operator. We immediately need the value here for this conditional jump. So putting the value into the heap wouldn't make sense because we would immediately push the value on top of the stack. So this is, again, a small inlined optimization. Okay. Now comes this instruction make basic, which we have made use of so far. So make basic does nothing else than it dereferences it takes the value on top of the stack. It creates a new abstract data type, namely for these basic values here, and then saves the reference on that on top of the stack. So what actually happens here is you take this 17, pop it, and you put a reference on that, so this 17 is now in this heap object for this basic value, and on top of the stack, you don't have this 17 anymore, but a reference to this heap object. Okay, do you have questions so far? Okay, so let's move on. So far, we haven't seen the concept of variables in this functional language. So here's a small example. We define a function f here of the following form, such that this function f, it has one argument. This is this a here. It has one argument. And inside this f, we make use of a local variable. This is this b. So we have one let binding here. And we make use of this parameter one time here in the right-hand side for this let binding of b. And then, well, we make use of this local variable here, and we also have one access to a global variable C here. So we have one global and one local variable and one parameter variable, this A thing. And for our language, the semantics is such that these binding of these global variables is determined at compile time. So this is a static binding. So we have a static binding, whereas there are some functional languages which make use of a dynamic binding of variables. That means if you have an access here to this variable C, then at compile time, you know that you bind this to this particular variable C. Whereas if you have dynamic binding, you would look up at runtime which global variable C you would actually make use of. So if you have several global variable C at compile time, you would take the global variable which has the nearest scope to your execution of this function f. Okay? So we make use of these global variables such that we bind these global variables to a vector and keep this vector in the heap. So this is this thing here. And these, so we have a vector then in the heap. It looks like this. Oops. Yeah, we have this vector thing here. Then we had an integer here, a positive integer here for the possible values here inside this vector. And we index them by zero. That means if here's our first global variable at index zero, and, well, at index n minus one is then the last global variable. In such a vector, we then store in the heap. And these things where we had these abstract data types for a function, well, we had this code pointer, we had this argument pointer, and we had this global pointer, and this global pointer then points to this vector in the heap of the global variables. And similar, if we have a closure, well, this closure thing had this tag C, we had a count pointer, and then we had a global pointer. Again, it points to an object in the heap, which is just a vector of these global variables. In order to evaluate these expressions then, well, what we do here is, in order to make life easier, we have one dedicated register, namely this GP, where we always store the pointer to the vector of the global variables. Whereas for the local variables, which we haven't really talked so far, the local variables, we store them on the stack. This is similar as for the schema. So finally, what we now can say is that our row environment has the following type, that we have a mapping from the variables to a tuple where the first component identifies either if the variable is a local or it is a global, and the second tuple component is then an address. Yeah.
So each function can have a different separate global vector, or is there just a single one called the globals?
No, exactly. This is the point that this is actually a good question. We can have different functions. So maybe we can, is this the right thing? Oh, yes, magic. We can have different functions, and so let's say here, and here, or this one. So we can have a function f1 here, which has this code pointer, this argument pointer, and a pointer to the globals. And this one now could point to this vector in the heap, and we can have a different function. And, well, again, we have this argument pointer, global pointer, and here are now our globals, which points then to this vector. Okay? So this really depends on the globals depends on the function. Okay, so let's get back. Then we had our address environment, which is again similar to the address environment for our schema. Yeah. Yes. So the question was why we have the z's here. That means we also have these negative integers. And yes, this is quite right. We also allow negative relative addresses. Again, we will see this later on, why this makes sense when we introduce these functions. But for globals, we only allow positive integers. But for the locals, we might take negative integers. Okay? So then, how can we actually access local variables? Well, we already said that these local variables are stored in the stack. This is similar to our schema code, where we also had, for each function call, we had a stack frame, and in the stack frame, we managed our local variables. And now consider this small example. We have an expression e, such that e prime must evaluate to a functional type, and we apply arguments e0 to em minus 1. So the first thing which we observe is that the arity of this function inside this expression e prime does not necessarily need to be of arity m. Why that? Well, there are two cases. F might receive less arguments than it actually needs. So f can be a function of, for example, of arity n, and we only apply less than n arguments. That means we partially apply the function to some arguments, and as a result, we again get a function, but which already has applied some of the arguments, but not all of them. That means we cannot evaluate it right away. Or the other case is Or the other case is that we can apply more arguments. That means, in that case, if we apply more arguments, we apply more arguments. Do you have any idea why this makes sense? So we have a function, for example, of array T3, and we apply 5 arguments to it. Does it make sense? When is this a good idea, or is this a bad idea? Yeah. Yes, perfectly fine. So if e prime returns a function, so it's a functional type, then the result of this e prime will consume the other arguments. Okay. So how could we actually organize our stack? Well, one idea is given here, where on top of the stack we have a pointer to our function object, and then we have starting here with the first argument until we have the last argument evaluated. The nice thing here is that we can actually address these local variables then, or these arguments, by dereferencing the frame pointer. But the local variables here for this e prime, they cannot be addressed anymore relatively to the frame pointer. Why can't we do this? Any idea? So this is somehow a bad layout. Well, yes.
Exactly, because of the the unnecessary or the oversupply of the arguments that we have. We don't know how far away from the frame pointer we are.
Exactly, this undersupply isn't a big problem, but the oversupply, if we supply more arguments, this function here, it doesn't know how many arguments are here on top of the stack, so it doesn't know how much he has to go down. So this is somehow a problem. So this stack organization is not useful for our scenario. So. The question was why one should give more arguments than you need. The answer is if you have a function which returns a function. And then if you return a function, you must evaluate that function too. And for this function, you might need arguments. So for the very first function, you just supply more arguments than you actually need. This function will then evaluate to a second function, and the second function will then consume the arguments which are oversupplied.
Okay?
Good.
What to do here?
Yes, this is, first we've identified the problem here. And yeah, we have seen that when we oversupply a function with too many arguments, then we cannot dereference the local variables anymore relative to this frame pointer. And also, well, if we have already applied some arguments to our function, we would somehow need to sneak them somehow under the arguments which we actually applied here. Okay, so we would somehow need to sneak them down here. This is a problem too. So how can we solve this? Well, one idea is to just reverse them. So that means we first have again our function e prime here, a reference to that on top of the stack, and then we have the first the first expression E0 here, and then we go down to EM minus 1. So that means in this case, we only need to push the arguments then here on top of the stack, and we are fine again. But addressing these arguments and these local variables is not possible anymore by the frame pointer, so relative to this one. So this is a problem. Because, well, this M is unknown to our function. We don't know how many variables we have pushed here. But we have solved at least the problems for these arguments. So one way to get out of this is that we always keep track of how our stack pointer or how our stack will increase or decrease. This, and now comes finally, we can talk about this idea of this thing stack difference, which we have left out so far. So now let's have a look at our idea of our stack. So again, we have a stack layout here where we have this frame pointer to this first cell. Then we have the expressions E0 to EM minus 1. And here we call this our stack pointer 0. So this is the initial stack pointer when we call our function. And, well, inside this function, we might push something on top of the stack. And this difference to the initial stack pointer 0, and the current stack pointer of the current evaluation of an expression, this difference is then this, the stack difference here, this SD. And whenever we know exactly what the stack difference is to this stack pointer 0 and the current stack pointer, well, we can always then take the stack pointer, subtract the stack pointer difference in order to get stack to the stack pointer 0, and from that on, we can then finally access our arguments and compute so on. This layout is then somehow familiar to us, because in our schema we had something similar where we said that at the frame pointer we had this, if we add something to it, we have a dereference to a local variable, or otherwise, if we have a negative number here, then we would made access to an argument of a function. And this is the same here too. So whenever we take a negative address and add it to our stack pointer, to our initial stack pointer, the stack pointer 0, then we access an parameter. Whereas for this schema, we actually had three organizational cells here, right? This program counter old, this frame pointer old, and so forth. So we had this three extra cells. Okay, is this idea of the stack difference clear why we need it? Okay. This is what I actually told you right away. So the difference between the current stack pointer and it's the initial stack pointer whenever we jumped into this function is then the difference is then given by this stack distance SD. And then the nice thing is that we can compute the stack difference for each expression at compile time. So we can simulate the movement of our stack at compile time. And the formal parameters here given as x0, x1, and so forth, they now have a relative address, and we again make use of non-positive, so we have negative addresses here. So if we look it up in our environment for a formal parameter, we always come up with this tuple of a local here and a negative address. So that means finally, the absolute address of this ith formal parameter is then given here. So we take the current stack pointer, subtract the stack distance, and then finally, by subtracting the I of it, we can access the address. So once again, if we look it up here, if we have this current stack pointer, we subtract it. So we go down here, and then taking the, in order to access the ith parameter, which is, for example, here, well, you subtract again by I in order to access this formal parameter. Whereas for the local variables for a function, well, which is given then by these let bindings, they will pushed on top of the stack. That means here we have positive addresses. So finally, this is an example of how a stack might look like. We again have the stack pointer here pointing on top of the stack. We have this stack difference, which points to the initial stack pointer. Then we have our local variables with positive addresses, and with negative addresses, we have the parameters. So this is now finally our stack layout. Okay? So now, in order to access a variable, we might think about this call by need and call by value thing. So in order to generate code V for a variable access, what we do is we make use of this primitive get var of x. And in case we are in a call by need scenario, then the result of this variable x might be a closure, which we need to evaluate. Therefore, we have this instruction eval, which just checks if get var, which we will see in a second how it is defined, if the thing behind x or what is stored in x, if it is a closure or if it was already evaluated. If it is a closure, we evaluate it, and otherwise eval does nothing. So now let's have a look at the primitive get var. Well, get var, first we look up in our environment row what this variable x actually is. And here, well, we have two things. First, we have this tag, and then we have this address. So depending on the tag, the address is differently interpreted. So we first do a match on the tag. And I guess the most interesting thing here is if it is a local. If it is a local, we emit push log, which we will see in a second what this does. And push log just computes it takes the address which we want to access, and this is stack distance minus I. So let's have a look how push log is defined. Well, push log does the following. It expects it expects here as an argument an integer, and then it will just dereference the stack pointer, so it subtracts n and takes the value out of it and pushes this on top of the stack. So this means here we subtract from the current stack pointer the number n, look it up what's inside there, and then push the value of this on top of this stack. So this is what's given here. We subtract it by n. We take the value out of it, push that on top of the stack, and we are done. So here, well, what have we done here? We have, if we want to access a local, we perform this push log of SD minus I. So why actually SD minus I? Well, what we do here is that we perform stack pointer minus this thing here. So this is this SD minus I. Well, but this is nothing else than stack pointer minus SD plus I. So this is then why we finally come up with an addition here. So there's no magic, but in order to access these locals, well, we have seen these are at positive addresses, right? So this is why we perform a minus here for this stack difference. Well, otherwise, if it is not a local, then it is a global. L and the global is one of the boring things here. We just access the vector of these globals and take out the ith component. And this is done by the instruction push glob of I. So here we have seen again this push log instruction. And here it comes. Yeah, this is what I've told you right before. Well, from the stack pointer, you subtract the result of this one. And if you multiply this out, well, you finally find out that this is the initial stack pointer, and we add just the ith to it. This push glob instruction, well, yeah, as I already said, this is, I guess, one of the basic or the most basic things here. There is nothing special. Come on. So, well, if we have this global pointer, it points to a vector in the heap, and there we have a ith component here. This points to some object in the heap, and what this push glob does, it takes the pointer here, puts it on top of the stack, so it points to this particular object in the heap. So finally, let's have a look at a small example in order to sharpen our intuition. Well, we have given here an expression such that we want to add B plus C, and this we should evaluate or emit code for it under this row. So that means B is a local variable, whereas C is a global variable, and we start with a stack distance of 1. And we want to emit code V for it. Yes, we assume we have done something before. There is something happened, so this is just one expression we now want to emit code for. Okay, so, well, how do we go on? Well, this is a binary operator, this plus, so we need to emit code for this B. So this means here we emit code for this get var of our variable B under this row. And then we want to evaluate it. We need to get the basic value of it, because this eval, again, if we have a closure, we need to evaluate it beforehand. Then we, by get basic, we return the basic value on top of the stack. Similarly, we perform a get var instruction here for this variable C. Similarly, we evaluate it, perform a get basic. Afterwards, We perform the operator, which is just an addition, so it's add. And then on top of the stack, we have the result of this expression. But since we want to perform a code V here, we must wrap this basic value and put it into the heap. And this is done by this make basic instruction. So on the right-hand side here, if we finally emit our final code in this first cell here, or in this first row, we protocolate the stack distance, because this is something we always need to know during the code generation in order to access our parameters or variables. So this getVar thing, what it does is, well, B is a local variable. So we know this. No. B is a local variable at this address 1. So this means we take this stack distance 1. 1 minus 1 is 0. So we perform this push log of 0. Well, eval is done as before, get basic as before. However, what we note is if before executing the extraction we had a stack distance of 1, we perform this push local operation. And this push local operation will, as a result, it will increase the stack. That means our stack distance then has increased by 1. So our stack distance is now 1. Eval itself, well, if it is a closure, it will evaluate that closure and as a result will put it on top of the stack. So this, the stack distance does not change. Similarly, as for getBasic, it will just pop the reference into the heap from the stack and put the basic value on top of the stack. So the stack distance or the stack itself does not change. Therefore, we have a stack distance of 2 here again. And now, similar to an access to a global variable, we perform here a push glob. And yeah, C is global, and it is at this absolute address 0. So we perform a push glob 0 instruction here. But what we observe again, the stack distance before executing this extraction is 2. And, well, we have pushed a global on top of the stack, so the stack distance has now increased by 1. And again, we perform this eval, basic, doesn't change anything. But now, before performing this addition, we have the stack distance of 3. And this add instruction, it will pop the two stack cells and perform the operation, namely the addition, and push again on top of the stack the result of it. That means we finally come up with a stack distance of 2. And then as the very last instruction, we perform a make basic. That means finally, after all these instructions have been executed, we have a stack distance of 2. Okay, do we have questions so far? Okay, so let's move on. Now we have these let expressions. So far we have only seen the an let of 1. And now we have this nested let expressions. So we have multiple lets. So in order to emit code for this, well, what we can do is we can allocate for all these local variables space. And in case if we perform a code by value, then we can evaluate these expressions and immediately bind them to the corresponding variable. Or if we perform a code by need, compilation, then we can construct these closures for these expressions and bind the closures to the variables. And since we want to evaluate the expression E0 here, we just need to emit code in order to eval then. And yeah, we return its value. For this example, we first assume that we don't have recursive lets here. So our let bindings are all non-recursive. Later in the lecture, we also will introduce recursive lets. That means that variable yi only depends on the i-1 variables before. Okay, so we want to emit code V for this expression. And we had here, once again, we had n many variable lets here. So what we do is we emit code for the first expression E1 under row. So here we have just this row, and we have the stack distance, which has been given here and under this row. And then we emit code for this second expression, so for the second let binding, but we make use of this environment row 1, whereas the row 1 is given here. It is just the old environment row, but it is updated here with the bindings from beforehand. That means here for this E2, we add the binding such that we have a new local variable Y1, which is, well, it is local, and it is at stack distance plus 1. And so forth. So we do this for all the lets here, from let y1 to yn. Finally, we emit code for this expression e0, and then we have this special instruction slide n. Well, what is slide n? Oops. Here we have slide n. Slide n is given as similar as in the schema. This slide k operation here, well, what it does, it pops k many stack cells, but we assume that on top of the stack we have a return value. So this is beforehand saved into the kth stack cell here. And then we, k plus 1 stack cell here, and then we pop these stack cells here beforehand. This is done by this slide operation down here. For these nested lets, why do we actually emit code like this? Could we do this in another way, or do you have any idea? So do we actually need a special instruction for that? Well, you could somehow think of a code generation scheme which just emits code for one let, and then it performs this slide, and it performs another let, and then performs a slide of one. It always just removes one thing. But the idea here is, if you, at compile time, if you know that you need n stack cells, so you already know that you will have n stack cells, then you can just allocate these n stack cells right away and remove them also afterwards just by one instruction. So again, this is a small optimization. What else do we see here? Well, beforehand we said that in case we perform code generation for a call by need, then we also may only evaluate the right-hand sides of these let bindings in case we actually need the expression. Therefore, we make use of this code C generation functions here. And only for the very last, this E0, which we finally want to evaluate, we immediately emit code V because, well, we are interested in that value, so we need to evaluate it anyway, so it wouldn't make sense to emit a closure for it. Okay, so now we have a small example given here. We have an expression E of the following form. First, we have a let binding and bind the expression 19 to the variable A. And afterwards, we have another let binding where we introduce a new local variable, this B. Assign the multiplication of A times A to it, and afterwards we want to evaluate the expression A plus B. So, furthermore, what is given, we have the row is empty, and the stack distance is also zero. So we are more or less at the very beginning of the program here. Okay, so we start with a stack distance here of zero, and we load the constant 19, so the right-hand side here of the let binding A equals 19. We perform, then what we observe, well, the stack has increased by one because of the load instruction, so our stack distance is now one. We perform a make basic instruction, which won't change the stack distance. So again, we have one. And now, well, this is the code for this first let binding. Now we need to emit code for this second let binding. So we emit code for this A times A. That means we take push log of zero here. Why zero? Well, how does our environment now look like? We have A is actually a local, and this is at address 1. That means we take stack distance minus the address here, which is 1. So 1 minus 1 is 0. Okay. So we push that on top of the stack. Well, that means our stack distance has increased just by one. We perform a get basic instruction in order to get the value of it. This doesn't change the stack distance, so we again arrive with two here. And we need to perform again a load of the variable A because we perform A times A here. And now we have a push log of 1, because, well, stack distance is 2. 2 minus the address here of our variable A here is 1, so 2 minus 1 is 1. So therefore, we have a push log of 1 here. Then again, we perform, what we observe then is that the stack distance has increased, so we are now at stack distance 3. We perform get basic, which doesn't change the stack distance. Then we perform the multiply instruction, which will pop the two arguments from the stack and put the result on top of the stack. Therefore, the stack distance has decreased by one, and we perform a make basic instruction. Now we actually perform this push log of 1, because now we emit code for this right-hand side here is A plus B. So we have a stack distance of 2. Well, what this means is we increase the stack distance by 1 just, so we arrive with a stack distance of 3 here. We again perform get basic, so nothing special over here. However, now we need to access this variable B. And this variable B, this variable B is also a local, but, well, at address 1 is this A, so since they are consecutive, then this variable B has the address 2. And we have a stack distance of 3, of three given here. Well, 3 minus 2 is 1, so we have a push log of 1 here. And the thing which you should observe right now is that we actually have an access to a variable or a load of a variable here with a relative address of 1, and here also with a relative address of 1, but this time we access the variable A, and this time we access the variable B. So if we would again come up with a small exercise like reverse engineer something, this becomes really, really tricky in this functional language, because the access to an address now depends on the stack. So you have the same address, but you access a different location. Okay, then we have this B. We get the basic value of it, doesn't change the stack distance, but the push log, of course, it increased the stack distance by 1, therefore we have this 4 here. Well, we arrive with this 4 at this add instruction. The add instruction will again pop 2 stack cells, perform the addition, and push it again on top of the stack. Therefore, we arrive with a stack distance of 3 at this make basic instruction, which won't change anything. Then we arrive at the stack distance of 3 here, and we would perform the slide instruction, the slide of 2. It would pop 2 stack cells, but beforehand it would save the result of the topmost stack cell. So this means finally we would have we would arrive with a stack distance of 1 down here, which is perfectly fine because, well, we started with a stack distance of 0, and one expression might only return 1 value. So if we check it, yeah, we arrived with 1 here, so the code is perfectly fine. Yeah, the slide instruction, we have already seen what it does. It saves the value here, down there, and then pops the stack cells before. Okay, yeah, questions? The previous slide, this one? This one? We have this load C right here, yeah.
Then make basic. Then when will we assign this to A? Like will it be assigned to A?
When do we assign this to A? Well, if this is the stack beforehand, and then we do this push log and this make basic. That means we have afterwards by make basic, we somehow have this thing here. So we had this load constant 19. Sorry, this 19. This is now how our stack looks like. Of course, the stack pointer has increased. And then we perform this make basic instruction here, and what make basic does is it will take the value, this 19 here from the stack, and create a new heap object, and will put in and will put there the 19 inside this heap object, and it will leave a reference on top of the stack to this object into the heap. And this was our initial stack pointer, and that means now at this local stack cell here we have our variable A. How do we what? But this is already the assignment, right? It is. If this is our stack pointer 0 here, and we load, that means at stack pointer 0 plus a positive integer. This is where our first local variable is located. That means stack pointer 0 plus 1, then we are at our first local variable. And this is what happens when we've executed this one here. Okay. This one?
In the first column, last one.
In the first column, this one, yeah.
Because we are loading A already.
Yes, this is there, we load A. And this is also a load of A because, well, we need it two times, so we load this A two times. Then perform the multiplication. And what we observe here is that we have different indices here or different addresses.
But we can keep the same address, right?
Sorry, say again.
We can keep this one as push.0 as well, the last one.
You mean with the last one, this one? Yes, but the same thing here. Here it is interesting that we have the same relative address, but these relative addresses now point to different variables, namely this A, and here it is this B. And now we have this push log 0, which will push the value of the local variable A on top of the stack. And now we have a push log of 1, which will again push the value of A on top of the stack, but what we observe here is that we have a stack distance of 1. So again, we know that A maps to its local variable and it is at address 1. So we perform stack distance minus the address here. 1 minus 1 is 0. So therefore, we have this 0 here. But after this operation, the stack distance has increased. Now we are by 2. And if we again want to access this A, because, well, we have 2 times here, we have an access to A, we perform stack distance, which is now 2. 2 minus 1 is 1. Therefore, we arrive here with push log of 1, although we access the same variable. And this is somehow the tricky part that we always have to simulate the behavior of our stack, if it increases or decreases during the evaluation of our expressions. Okay?
eliminate the slide 2 in the end and not slide 3 to pop
all. Ah, okay. The question is, why do we actually perform a slide 2 and not a slide 3? Well, similar as for the schema and... Ah, yeah.
It's just an expression of the statement. And the slide 2 concerns the local variables A and B.
Exactly.
So we don't pop the...
Exactly. It is like for the schema, an expression always returns exactly one value. And since we have now three values, here we see that the initial stack distance was 0. Now we have a stack distance of 3. And, well, an expression is only allowed to return exactly one value. That means we have somehow intermediate values on the stack, namely the local variable A and the local variable B, which we now need to pop, but an expression must return exactly one value. Therefore, we only pop 2, namely this A and B, but the result, namely this multiplication of A times A and then A plus B, the value of that must be popped, must be pushed or kept on the stack. Okay? Well, actually, I wanted to start with his function definitions, but since we only have left 3 minutes, I think this is a good point to stop the lecture now. That means next time we will have a look at function definitions and, function applications, of course, then too. So that's it for today. Thank you.